Chapter 33. Cascada. The most unearthly, painful noise shattered a normal day in the palace. Matwick had just given his valet his orders. The man froze, asking,
"What's that?"
But the Lord Regent was already sprinting toward the throne room, joining a stream of servants, guards and gentry, all headed in the same direction. They crowded into the lower level while still other palace residents appeared on the inner balconies that faced the throne room. The catamounts were yowling. Their voices ranged from high-pitched screeches to low growls, varying without pattern in pitch and volume. Inside the cavernous hall, the noise reverberated so deafeningly, no one could talk. But everyone looked to the dedication fountain because the waters had ceased flowing. Only on the death of a queen did a fountain break from its comforting, constant flow. In the city centre, in the courtyard of the Star, the Nargis fountain must have stopped too. Matwick watched the dedication fountain in agony. This cessation had to be for Cressa. If the waters stopped entirely, then the Princella was dead too. With anxious hope, he bit the inside of his cheek, bloody staring at the dais. The waters began to flow again, and the catamounts ceased their awful caterwauling. Matwick recollected himself enough to fall to one knee in a show of piety toward the old and new queens, a gesture all in the room followed. As he bent his head, he pulled himself together.
"The important thing is that Cressa is dead. Tidings of her triumphs have become insufferable. Even some of my confederates looked forward to her return. Now I can grieve her. The role of mourner-in-chief suits me, and my hands are completely clean of this deed. As for the Princella, she must only be 12. If I could only locate her, my original plan could be put into play."
Matwick rose and climbed onto the step to address the assembled multitude. He might have climbed higher, but he suspected that the mountain lions would not allow this trespass.
"What a wretched day this is for all of Weirendale. Our courageous Queen Cressa, taken from us after such a short reign. After all her bravery in lifting the scourge of the Pelish from the seas, I warned her. I told her that joining the fight would put her personhood in danger, but she was ever a touch stubborn. That trait gave her strength, but now has brought us everlasting sorrow. I will immediately commission the composition of a great lay about her heroic deeds. While we do not yet know the circumstances of her death, we can be certain that her ending has to have been as stirring as her life. The funerary feast will be 1 week from today. That is all I can say to you right now. My friends, I am quite overcome."
A portly older woman, yes, the nursemaid, sobbed uncontrollably, and the freakish servant with a hole in his cheek had a hard time holding her up. Matwick strode out of the throne room. He plumbed his feelings and found to his surprise that not all his grief was feigned. He remembered Cressa as a fresh-faced young woman, so eager to do well, so cowed by Katrina's long shadow. She had looked to him for guidance and been so keen to learn. He had felt touched by her trust and stirred into something like loyalty.
When did my loyalty evaporate?
Well, she grew stronger, that pliable sapling. As she took firmer hold of the reins of government, she came closer to sniffing out my various side deals and secrets. And at the end, I just spotted my opportunity. Matwick returned to his chambers and poured himself a full glass of wine. He raised it to Cressa's memory in salute and drank it down.
I do so hope I will not have to kill your daughter.
Prejean was the first of his associates to seek him out. Of course, Latli's and Jurgen's age made it hard to stir themselves quickly, and Tenny would be paralysed, wrestling with her conscience.
Now what, Lord Regent?
Asked Prejean. He was shaking, just a little.
Now it becomes even more imperative that we find the Princella. Folk, little people or gentry, like stability. Nothing breaks up stability like the death of a monarch. We need to find the girl, get her dedicated, and put her on the throne while she is still easy to control.
We have searched everywhere, said Prejean.
Well, she lives, commented General Jurgen as he entered, or the fountains would have stopped completely, and if she is alive, we can find her.
Latli and Retzel showed up, waddling slowly together.
How Matwick wished they would die so that he could surround himself with sharper young minds.
Oh, my poor queen, sobbed Latli. My poor Cressa. To die at 36. I was a friend of her mother, you know. I do believe that Katrina would be so grieved to learn what has happened to her daughter. And she never even met her grand babe.
Latli was putting on quite a show of grief, though perhaps the sentimental fool truly believed her own stories.
Yes, yes, said Jurgen.
His usually mild blue eyes had a shrewd look today.
Do you have any fresh ideas, Lord Regent, for finding the Princella?
Lord Retzel broke in.
I had a thought!
Matwick did not let the surprise show on his face.
Pray enlighten us, Lord.
Remember that shield? That man Pontiel or something, eh? You questioned him closely when he returned with the horses, eh?
Yes.
And he knew nothing of the Princella's whereabouts, eh? And he knew nothing of where she had been hidden. Mayhap now the Cressa is dead, her enchantment would weaken, eh?
Lord Retzel raised his eyebrows, pleased with himself. That was an interesting idea. Matwick sent for the Royal Chronicler immediately. While they waited, he offered his guests wine and ordered oysters from the kitchens. The Royal Chronicler, Sewell, arrived after a short delay.
My Lord Regent, he said, with a sidelong glance at the wine and oysters, as if disapproving of their comforts.
A terrible day for Weirendale. I have a crush of ceremonies to arrange with the Sisters and Brothers of Sorrow. How may I serve you?
Matwick and Sewell did not get on. By every measurement, Matwick held more power and stature, yet he intuited that Sewell scorned him. Matwick bristled at the man's imperviousness and impertinence.
Then I will get right to the point,
Matwick said icily.
Cressa's talent was enchantment, correct?
Sewell blinked at the fact that this secret was not actually secret. Given that she had perished, though, he no longer felt duty-bound to keep her talent quiet. In fact, one of his obligations was to publish her name for history, Cressa the Enchanter.
Yes,
he confirmed, but he had already dropped the honorific Milord.
Will her enchantments fade away now she is gone? That is, will those she enchanted now regain their memories or knowledge?
No.
when she enchanted them, she changed them. It would be impossible for anyone to reverse the magic. They might gain new knowledge at odds with what they previously believed, but holding two contradictory ideas would cause them unbearable strain. Not even under strong inducement? No, said Sewell, his nostrils flared from this mere suggestion of torture. Very well, you may leave us.
Wait one moment, broke in General Jürgen. When I was a lad, I learnt a ditty. I recall only the last line. A talent for the times.
Yes, replied Sewell. Children sing a play song, The Water's Choice.
When danger through the realm may reach, the Nagis nymph allots to each a talent for the times.
Exactly, said Jürgen, slapping his knee. The song indicates the spirit knows the gravest challenges facing the nation in advance and gives the queen's talents accordingly. But since Cressa is, alas, no more, shouldn't the Lord Regent be equipped with the information you possess about the Princella, so that he may safely guide the realm in her absence?
I never had the opportunity to define the Princella, said Sewell primly. And you know that seeking to ferret out talents constitutes high treason.
Never define the Princella. What, with the child being so grown before she left us? You never raised the flag, but it is impossible that you don't know something about her abilities.
Matwick's tone of voice conveyed his distrust of the chronicler's veracity.
A lack of definition caused both the queen and daughter distress.
How very peculiar, said Matwick. But let's not bandy about the word treason, Sewell. You never know to whom the word might stick.
Sewell departed, and while his guests fed their sorrow, Matwick tapped his right middle finger against the soft hollows of his left fist.
There was still something in what you said, Lord Redsel. We know when Sea Sprite left here, and that it turned up in Yoster for provisions weeks later. Shield Pontol didn't recall exactly how long they had been at sea.
Matwick thoughtfully held up his hands, his fingers opposing one another, and tapped them together, first the index fingers, then the middle ones, and so on.
Prision, I am going to send you to Yoster. You will go through all the paperwork of all the merchants 4 years ago, until you find the ones that provision Sea Sprite.
But how will that help us, Matwick?
Asked Retzel.
When we know the exact amount of time Sea Sprite spent at sea, we will have mariners calculate what possible ports of call she could have put into. That will narrow our search considerably.
I thought along these lines some years ago, Matwick,
Jürgen said.
But other variables include the weather, and how long the ship may have tarried in port, and the girl may well have moved on from her first hideaway.
Matwick was annoyed that Jürgen had already dismissed his breakthrough.
My esteemed general, I hear your quibbles. But have you anything else to suggest?
Well, I had hoped that Cressa would lead us to her kitten, since that no longer appears possible. Prision, pack your bags,
ordered Matwick.
And pack up that curvy little mistress, too. You may be going through dusty papers in Yoster for a long time.
Turning to his valet, he said,
send word of these events to my wife in the country.
Then, since the other councillors looked so comfortable and settled in his chambers, Matwick left the room, eager to get away from his closest advisers. He walked through the palace with no particular goal, just observing the activity and the people. The corridors and the halls remained as polished as ever, but most of the servants he passed were in shock or grieving. Matwick may not have actually liked individuals, but he always found being in the presence of other people soothing. He patted a young page on the head and offered a crying cook his kerchief. He felt useful and needed. This was his palace. These were his people. They counted on him to keep the realm under control. He spent too much time with the scheming nobles and gentry. The simple folk held the real power. As regent, he needed to be loved by the people so that he had an alternate power base that could indeed prove handy. He would speak to the city tomorrow from the balcony of City Hall in the courtyard of the Star, offering reassurance and stability. A steady hand in a trying tempest. Really, he should change into a black outfit. He might even have a new one made out of silk and a simple mourning circlet. Severe and simple, but the finest silver. Silk for the funerary feast would be most fitting. And mayhap just a smidge of rouge to redden the eyelids.